This is Hoosier Ag Today. I'm Eric Pfeiffer, reporting on the latest news in agriculture and doing so today with United States Deputy Secretary of Agriculture Stephen Vaden. And thank you for joining us here on Hoosier Ag Today. We obviously have a lot of news to talk about here. First and foremost, the government is back open. That has to be good news for you and your employees. How long before things get back to normal at USDA?
Well, our first day of reopening was yesterday. That means all of our FSA offices, our county offices, are returning to normal operations. As you know, we reopened them on a partial basis during the shutdown, allowing us to perform certain vital actions we were legally allowed to do for farmers. Now they're open for everything. I would encourage any of your listeners that need to visit their FSA county office to call ahead. Make certain that you're not going to go at a time when you're going to have to wait in line or what have you, but call ahead, possibly make an appointment, and then visit your office in the coming days to take care of all the business that unfortunately the minority in Congress prevented you from taking care of over the last 45 days.
With the government reopening, the deal that was struck in Congress and signed by President Trump, there were some important things in there for agriculture, your budget, the extension of some farm bill programs. Can you touch on that and the importance of getting that done at this juncture?
Well, we're exceptionally fortunate, Eric, because the compromise that was reached by the Congress provides full-year funding for almost all of USDA. I say almost all because the Forest Service rides along on a separate bill that was not included. But with the exception of the Forest Service, for all of our farm-facing programs, FSA, Natural Resources Conservation Service, the Risk Management Agency, what have you, we've got full-year appropriations. That means, as far as our farm community is concerned, whatever happens in January, and I certainly hope there's not another government shutdown, but if there is, it's not going to affect our farm-facing programs. We have full-year appropriations. We will march on completely unaffected and open 100% when it comes to those programs. So that's the first thing for people to know. Second, you noted we have extended the farm bill. I'm hopeful that we can have a discussion as we move into the next calendar year about taking care of those programs in a farm bill 2.0. a rump farm bill, whatever you wish to call it, for those items that weren't able to be taken care of in the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. But that's probably the most exciting part about 2026. We get to the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. We get to the provisions that will be in place for next crop year. Most importantly, including for crop year 26, producers will no longer have to gamble between their election of ARC and PLC. The law says for next year, we're going to calculate it for every producer under both, and whichever one the producer would have ended up better on, you get it. That's a huge difference for farm country. That's going to mean billions of more dollars in farmers' pockets in support payments. And all of that is thanks to the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. It's automatic. Producers don't need to worry about the election, as I mentioned. And don't forget the increased reference prices that come along to it. We've needed that for years. Congress delivered and the president signed it with the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. And those reference prices will now reflect the very much increased cost of production over the past several years for raising the crops we all depend on.
You mentioned billions that can come back to farmers, and that's certainly welcome. There was talk prior to the shutdown of somewhere in the neighborhood of $10 to $15 billion has been reported in aid to producers that have been impacted by the trade standoff with China, which we hope has come to an end, and we can touch on that in a moment. But in speaking with Secretary Rollins when she was in Indiana here recently, she said, yes, plans are still in place to do something, but we have to wait until the government's reopened. Well, here we are. Government's reopened. Do we have an updated timeline when we might know more about that aid?
Well, we are working on it, Eric. And as you know, things have changed over the past several weeks. As you quite rightly noted, the president negotiated a trade agreement with China. He also negotiated trade agreements with multiple Southeast Asian countries, which are bringing millions of more tons of demand, particularly for products like soybeans. We will need to take that into account in our calculations, because the entire goal of any program should be to provide a bridge to 2026 and to reflect current current market conditions, which thankfully have improved. Soybean prices are at 15-month highs. That's a positive, but we will need to take that new data into account as we measure the amount of aid that we can and should provide as part of our program.
People may not understand your background with trade and your experience as a judge in the International Court of Trade. I mean, the big question, and I think that this has been a question during Trump 1 and now during Trump 2, are tariffs the right way to go? And obviously the president has decided this is the way to go. But even bigger than that, with this agreement with China, can we trust them? And I think that has a lot of producers concerned. What's your take on the tariff approach? And also, can we trust China to follow through on this agreement?
Well, you are correct that I do have a background in trade. And as you noted, I served as a judge on the United States Court of International Trade during the period from 2020 to 2025, when I was confirmed to be deputy secretary here at USDA. So I'm very familiar with the legal mechanisms that are available to the president to help manage trade. The first thing I want to point out is the difference between now and the prior 4 years. In the prior 4 years, there was no trade strategy. They didn't negotiate with a single country. Not a single deal was reached. So American agriculture was treading water. And of course, you know, if you're treading water, eventually you drown. So right now, what we're doing is actively trying to bust open these markets, whether it be tariff barriers or whether it be non-tariff barriers that prevent the sale of all of our agriculture commodities into those countries. That's a good thing. When it comes to the China deal, I understand 1,000% the question, will China keep its word? And I know that people look back to the agreement that President Trump negotiated, the Phase One agreement in 2020, and they quite rightly note that Beijing didn't end up keeping its word. But there's a difference. Beijing stopped keeping its word when the occupant in the White House changed. Joe Biden, as I noted, didn't do anything to enforce the Phase One deal, and he also didn't negotiate a single new trade agreement with any country, no matter how small, during his entire tenure. This is the first year of President Trump's second term. He's got three more years to go. The agreement that he has made with the Chinese government covers all three of those years, and he's going to be in the White House to enforce it. If there's one thing I'm certain your listeners know, is that if you make an agreement with President Trump and then you violate that agreement, he doesn't forget it, and he doesn't allow you to slide by with it. And so I have every confidence that if the Chinese government should make the mistake of not living up to the commitment it has made to the president, then the president will hold them accountable. And that's going to be the difference. The president will not let them forget the commitments that they have made to American farmers, and he will stand by and make certain that those purchases are made, or there will be consequences.
Last question for me here, Mr. Secretary, and that is that USDA is branching out of D.C. in a move to move closer to its constituents, and I know that we're still awaiting details. I imagine the government shutdown might have impacted the timeline here. Obviously, Indianapolis will be one of those hubs. Do you have any details you can share on a timeline or what we might see in Indianapolis?
Eric, I'm so glad you mentioned that, because that is one of the things that we are excited to jump back on board. During the shutdown, I actually made a trip out to Colorado to visit our Fort Collins hub location. I conducted two legally required tribal consultations, one here in Washington, D.C., one out in Colorado, closer to where many of the tribes are located. At both of those consultations, we had a virtual attendance option so that people could appear virtually as well as in person. Dozens of tribes took advantage of those opportunities at both locations. So though it may not have been as much in the forefront in terms of what was being covered, we were still marching forward. And now that the government is reopened, we're going to be marching double time to implement it. I've still got to come see you in Indiana, because that is one of the two hub locations I have yet to visit, the other one being Salt Lake City, Utah. It's important for me as Deputy Secretary to personally lay eyes on the offices that we will be sending our employees to so that I can be satisfied it is a place I would want to work. We want to assure that they're going to have the great quality of life and the lower cost of living that is the genesis of all of this. Indiana is an important part of that, and we're going to be moving people people there. And as we move into 2026, you can expect to see announcements about what and when we're moving, but we're keeping our employees in mind. We want to ensure that we're going to be the least disruptive to their lives as possible. And part of that includes taking account of the school year. We want the children of those employees who will move to be able to complete their school year here in the Washington, D.C. area, and then be in place in time to take part in their new school system and their new home going forward. We're doing this with the employees in mind because that's ultimately what we're doing it for. We want to keep our employees. The only way we can do that is to put them in places where the government salary ensures a quality of life commensurate with what we would all want. And Indiana is one of those places, and I'm excited about the move we'll be making in the coming year there.
Mr. Secretary, thank you so much for joining us on Hoosier Ag today. We really appreciate your time. Any final thoughts you'd like to share?
Well, we're working on so much here, but obviously we're doing it all on behalf of the American farmer. When the Secretary and I are out traveling, all of the feedback that we receive, it goes into policy discussions that not only we have here internally at USDA, but also we have with the White House. I just keep encouraging all your listeners to give us the feedback so that we can have the best policy outcomes. And finally, I'd be remiss if I did not note, Eric, that we're going into flu season, not just for humans, but also for poultry. HPAI is unfortunately beginning to rear its ugly head, and I want to remind all your listeners that we continue to provide free biosecurity audits for all poultry producers. All any of your listeners need to do is email us at poultry.biosecurity@usda.gov or give us a call at 844-820-2234. And we will send our experts from the Animal Plant Health Inspection Service to look at any poultry growing operation. We will find any ways HPAI may be able to sneak into that facility, and we will work with the producers to repair those poultry facilities, hopefully to ensure that they are part of the solution and do not have to be threatened with depopulation because of an HPAI infection. As we work toward with the grants that we announced last week, our Poultry Innovation Grand Challenge that funded 58 projects that hopefully will lead to better therapeutics and perhaps even a vaccine to deal with HPAI. The best we can do is be prepared. That's through those biosecurity audits. So any poultry grower who's listening into your network today, Eric, I hope if they have not had us visit for this free biosecurity audit where we can help them make certain they are as secure as possible against HPAI, please contact us so we can help help them keep HPAI out of their flocks.
And HPAI is hitting northern Indiana especially hard right now with just, I think, 34 cases in the past month and a half or so in LaGrange County alone. So thank you for that. Again, Mr. Secretary, thank you for joining us on Hoosier Ag today.
Thank you, Eric.